Bon Appetit Foodcast. I am Adam Rappaport. This week, we've got a good one for you. Carla Lolly Music, our food director, sits down with Emil Stonick, editor of our Basically website, and they are back to talk about rice. Now, perhaps you listened to their first rice episode. I don't know what they were like eating or drinking or smoking, but it was an interesting conversation, and they're back for more this time. They cover everything from brown rice to Persian crispy rice. And then after that, we have Ruman Alam, special projects editor of the New York Times book section. He reads an essay that he wrote for our May travel issue, which is out now. The essay is called Drinkin' in Dhaka. Ruman published a book called Rich and Pretty last year, and his new book, That Kind of Mother, is out May 8th. But before we get started, I wanted to share some cool news with you. We are starting a newsletter for the podcast. Rolls out in the near future. So each week as we release a new episode, we will be giving you some related reading material, some behind-the-scenes fun, and we also want to hear what you'd like to see in the newsletter. And to do so, as always, you can email us your suggestions at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. That is bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. And so to sign up, here's what you got to do to sign up. Now, ready? Got a pencil? Got a paper? Go to tinyletter.com/foodcast and enter your email. Once again, tinyletter.com/foodcast. All right. Here is Carla and Emil talking rice. Let's do this thing.
Mama made me mash my M&M's.
Me.
Mama made me mash my M&M's.
I never did that.
You ever did that?
So you did theater? Is that where this is coming from?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I did. I was like a theater choir. I was also in a chamber music group.
Yeah? What'd you play?
Oh, your no. Voice. It was called Madrigals, and it was all pre-Renaissance chamber music, and we had to wear... I had to wear like white tights and like
you had to, you got to.
I got to.
yeah.
You know, like a velvet top thing with like jewels on it.
Where is that outfit now?
It was a rental. Oh. They're very expensive.
I feel like we can just jump right in.
Yeah, probably.
We love rice. I think everybody knows that. I've gotten a lot of feedback about how much other people love rice, how much they loved listening to people talk about loving rice. Rice lovers will listen to rice talk.
Oh my God, rice talk.
I mean,
why didn't we go? That's the name of the podcast, Rice Talk.
It feels rice.
It feels rice. It's rice is beloved the world over.
I mean, it's one of the great grains. It might be the greatest grain.
Great grains, also a good name for a podcast. You know, that was the name, Great Sage was the name of the first restaurant that I ever worked at.
Great Sage.
Yeah.
That sounds like...
Fine, casual, vegan, and vegetarian cuisine. Shout out to Great Sage in Columbia, Maryland, if you're listening.
Shout out.
Yeah.
Great Grains. Rice is one of them. I brought some source material with me today because last time I felt like we did kind of get into rice from a very heartsy place. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was more of an emotional response to the topic, which
totally.
I do have a lot of emotions about. And I think food is emotions and emotions are food.
Eat your feelings. You can eat. Yeah.
Feel good. Feel like eating.
Right.
Anyway, of course, we have an emotional attachment to food, especially rice, which is, as we've already said, one of the great grains. Mm-hmm. I think we talked a lot about how we felt about rice, and you did a great job of talking about the perfect pot of rice. But in general, we really were just talking about like why we love it so much.
We were just riffing.
We were just
feeling our eats, not eating our feelings.
And so we did get a lot of really nice feedback through the podcast email, which we read and we share and we talk about.
I want to read that. Nobody told me to read that.
I got some tweets. Some people be tweeting at me.
Mm.
And then sometimes I'll get feedback on Instagram from people who listen to the podcast on that. So like I never really can remember, like it might be about something unrelated, but people were giving feedback and some just anecdotal, like, oh my God, I just listened to the Rice podcast with Larry's. But then Emma does get these emails and we, you know, share because the people wanted more rice. That was clear. And specifically, there was some questions about brown rice, which I think has befuddled humans for many times, long time.
For many times, people have been befuddled.
Well, brown rice is like, I think people are, as you pointed out last time, people are just freaked out about cooking rice. It's like one of the basics, like eggs, that people are just like, I don't know.
Right, totally.
I'm going to screw it up.
It's either you know how to make it and you've got your way to make it and that's the only way you can make it, or you're just kind of like, you're having a hard time finding the, like getting your toes in the water.
It's like burns rice once and then just terrified forever.
Are we just making memes about rice? Burns rice.
I burned rice last night.
Ooh.
Can we?
What happened?
We were going to talk about rice dishes. We're also going to talk about brown rice. Maybe I'll save my burnt rice experience for later.
The people want to know about brown rice, Carla.
They do.
How do you, I mean, what's, do you cook a lot of brown rice?
I like brown rice. My only reason why I don't cook brown rice more is because of the time involved.
Uh-huh.
So it's like one of those things that a lot of times I don't decide what is going to be for dinner until I start cooking it.
Right.
And when that's happening, I'm like, do I have 40 minutes for brown rice? Like, I would love to be eating dinner before 40 minutes has gone by.
Totally. Which is kind of the nice thing about white rice is you're like, all right, 20 minutes. Can I make the rest of my dinner in 20 minutes?
More totally. Like with white rice, you're like, let's delay starting to cook the rice until I get a head start, because otherwise the rice is going to be done too fast. I will say this, a lot of talk about the pressure cooker this week, but the pressure cookers are a great way of dealing with brown rice. So I think we should include that as one of the methods for the PC heads out there, the IP people who might be listening.
What are you talking about?
Well, IP is like Instant Pot.
Sorry. I was thinking intellectual property.
No,
I was like,
no. Although, yeah, you could kind of go there.
What's
but
the other
PC,
thing, the PC?
Pressure cooker.
Oh, pressure cooker. I'm sorry. I'm not hip to the lingo, Carla. All right. I guess I'm not like the PC, the IP. The SC.
You know what's messed up is that, like, really I want to say pressure cooker people, but that wouldn't be PCP. And that's, like, not.
Well, also primary care physician. I was like, somebody was on the internet being like, I'm having such a hard time finding PCP, finding a PCP. And I'm like, you don't normally, you don't refer to it that way. It's not like a PCP. You sound like a narc. Like, that's how it's sold. Well, I don't know. I don't actually know.
We're just talking about pressure cooking.
Pressure cooking.
And my pressure cooker people. You know who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a pressure cooker person.
I know. You just didn't know the lingo.
Yeah.
The PCP. Okay. All right.
Moving
along. So you had a question. Your question was,
what is your preferred brown rice cooking method?
So I did do a little more background work for this podcast because trying to separate the heart and the mind.
More facts, less feelings.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And there's basically two ways to go about it.
Okay.
There's absorption method, which is where all of the water ideally is evaporated or absorbed, in this case, into the rice by the end of the cooking. And then there's the
So that's kind of more like the way that you would cook regular rice.
Exactly
kind of
how you described last time, where you know, there's a measured amount of water to a measured amount of rice, a certain heat level. Covered, you know,
and at the
timing.
End of the cooking, there's no water in there, just perfectly plumped.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully the water is gone, the rice is perfectly cooked, and there's no scorching.
So that's absorption.
That's absorption. And then the other method is what we refer to anecdotally together as the pasta cooking method for grains, which is when you...
The PCM.
That's PCM?
Pasta cooking method?
Yeah, but that gets confusing because if PC has referred to pressure cooking,
pasta,
then it's like
grains as pasta cooking method.
I brought a really amazing book. I brought a book called Seductions of Rice by Jeffrey Alford and Naomi Duguid. I know I'm mispronouncing her name. I do it wrong every time, but these guys have written and photographed many books. And
what a title.
Seductions of Rice. I mean, who could resist that? They are fantastic and they're like world travelers. So this rice book covers like every type of rice I had ever heard of from around the world. But they have another way of referring to it, which is like the lots of water method, which I was like, all right, that's cool. That's pretty straightforward.
They used all of their like naming energy on the book, Seductions of Rice, and they're like, it's the lot of water method.
Exactly. It's the LOW method. Yep. Lots of water.
The low method.
The low method. So I like them both. I think that there are different ratios for water to rice, and it seems to vary. Like the span is like bigger than for white rice. So I saw everything from 2 cups of brown rice for 4 cups of water to 2 cups of brown rice and 5 cups of water.
Wow.
And cooking times that range between 40 and 50 minutes with like a 10 minute resting period at the end. Mm-hmm. And that was for absorption.
Okay.
So it's really the same. You're rinsing the rice. So this is an interesting fact that I picked up.
Mm.
Because brown rice is brown rice because it's the same as white rice, except that the outer hull has not been removed. And because pesticides and other chemicals that are used in the farming can cling to that hull, it's more important with brown rice, or it's very important with brown rice to try to use an organic one because that stuff is there.
Right.
It just has not been removed. It hasn't been rinsed in part of the processing.
Right, right. It's like how you have to like, if you're buying like conventionally grown peaches, you want to give them a good scrub because it's easier for all of that
to stick on there and to like be there. So that I thought was kind of interesting. And brown rice is more nutritious, a little bit more. And it's not, I always thought it was only about the fiber, but it's actually about like a bunch of other minerals and vitamins and C and D and thiamine and niacin. So whatever. But it also is harder to digest because the hull is there and certain things become like more available.
So brown rice is like better for you in certain ways, but also better for you than white rice in certain ways, but also
I think the truth is that brown rice and white rice are both a great food and they're really good for you, and that brown rice maybe has small amounts of nutritional advantages. But it's really more about like just what you like and the flavor of it. Because the biggest difference I think in just eating brown rice and white rice is like you get more of that earthy,
totally
nutty
flavor
and a chewier texture with brown rice.
Right. Well, and I think that's the thing that I really like, especially about the low method, the lots of water method. It's like a little easier to choose your own adventure, like what you want that texture to be. Like,
totally.
If you're just like, you're dumping it in, you do have to wait for a lot of water to come to a boil, but you still do the same way you would with pasta.
Right.
And you got to season it well.
So let's just back up and like,
okay.
So the lots
of
you, because you've already started, but like, so the lots of water method is?
Lots of water
lots
in
of
a
water.
Pot. The way you would if you're cooking pasta, season it so it's nice. Probably not quite as salty as pasta water, but you want to get like, you want to taste the salt in that water. Bring it up to a boil. You want to take it from here.
Simmer away.
Simmer.
And
we didn't put the rice in yet.
Oh yeah, put the rice in.
Put the rice in.
Ow. After it boils.
After it
boils. Right, you're not bringing it up from cold.
Right.
Rinse the rice first.
Oh yes.
And then there are a lot of recipes in general recommend like letting the rice sit after it's been rinsed for 15 minutes up to an hour.
Oh, interesting. To kind of like soak and hydrate a little bit.
I think that's what it's about. And cool. If you have time to do that, do that. If you don't, I think it'll be okay. And then you're just cooking it and simmering it, and maybe a little bit of foam is going to come up to the top because there is a little bit more impurity on the surface of the rice grains. Skim that off. It's not a big deal. And then, like you said, the good thing about this method is you can sort of start tasting it about, 8 or 10 minutes in.
Right.
I don't know exactly how long it will take because it just depends.
Depends on how much water you're using. This is really like the thing about the absorption method is you kind of have to nail your quantities and your times. The low method, it's going to be different every time, but you also, you're just doing it to taste. There aren't like times and temperatures here. It's just kind of like.
So I think that the absorption method is a little scary for people because it's like, it goes into the box, the lid goes on, and it's like, I hope it's working, you know? And you might hear some rattling, and sometimes some of that like foam starts.
Wait, can we back up for a second? What's the box that it's going in?
I mean, the pot.
Oh, the pot.
But
okay.
You're sort of like, oh, I put this thing over there. I put the lid on it.
Right.
And now I can't see it. I don't have one of those glass pots.
40 to 50 anxiety-producing minutes of wondering whether
that rice
is done.
And you're like, oh, the lid
is
rattling. Oh, some of the foamy, you know, foamy stuff is coming out. Like, what's happening in there? But if you open the lid and stir it, like, you really shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
So I think with the lots of water method, you get this opportunity to kind of be more active in the cooking process. And you can see it, you can taste it, you can stir it, you can chew it. All that stuff.
Right. So let's start from there. So it's like it's in there, you're tasting, and maybe you're making like a rice salad or something like that. Or this is going to be, you want like those kind of individuated, you still want like a tiny bit al dente, not like a crunch, but like, you know, when they you get that kind of like squeaky pop that
totally
sometimes
love
have.
That.
And then, you know, maybe that's done. Maybe you're going to serve it cold and then you're just going to scoop everything out with like a strainer or something like that. Get it on a sheet tray, spread it out so it can cool a little bit. Maybe you even like pop it in the fridge after that so you can really wick off some of the moisture. And then you have like perfect toothy brown rice. But you could also leave it a little softer, kind of more like a white rice, like almost like a, you can get to the sticky place.
Yeah, too. Not to the point maybe where the hull splits and it starts to like open up, but it's totally tender.
Right.
There's like not, you know, a little bit past al dente. And in Seductions of Rice, one of their favorite ways to serve just like plainly cooked rice, and they make two distinctions. They generally say don't salt the water if you're serving it with Asian cuisines because it's more the blank canvas in that scenario. But in other dishes, like you would salt the water. And then all these recipes just recommend like piling it up on a platter and drizzling ghee or olive oil over it.
Oh my God. That sounds so good.
Doesn't sound so good. Just
ghee
that.
Ghee over brown rice?
Delish. Oh. I made some ghee the other day.
Made?
Yeah. Here in the test kitchen. One World Trade Center ghee.
Wow.
I found like a random block of plou gras, which is a type of butter. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was great.
Well,
so we could do that after this, actually.
The ghee podcast?
We could just go in the kitchen and have rice with ghee.
Oh, we could.
Because there's ghee.
There's ghee. Is there brown rice?
Always.
Really?
It's not cooked.
No, it's not cooked. Right.
You might have to pressure cook it.
Do I look like I got 50 minutes, Carla?
No, you don't, which is why we should talk about the pressure cooker method.
Oh, yeah. Talk to
me. That was like a smooth transition.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got our absorption, 2 to 4 or 2 to 5, medium low. You're rinsing the rice, you're letting it sit for 15 minutes into the pot, twice as much water. I mean, maybe split the difference, go 2 cups of rice, 4.5 cups.
Yeah.
Splash of salt in there, go and just trust.
So that's the like, bring it up to a boil, drop it to a simmer, cover.
Yeah. Go just pray. Pray for 40 minutes and then let it sit.
I will say though, one thing, you know, I have cooked brown rice using the absorption method, and I do find that if it ends up that your rice, it's a little bit more forgiving, I think, than regular white rice is, and that's kind of one of the benefits of it. It's like if you finish, the appointed time has passed, you take the lid off and you like look at it and you're like, oh, it looks dry and undercooked. You put a splash of boiling water in there. You cover it, you let it go a little bit longer.
Yeah.
You know, it's just because that hull is so sturdy and
it's
going to prevent that. It's not like a matter of seconds like it is with white rice sometimes where you go from like perfectly individuated to gummy and mushy. It's you got a little bit
just
more wiggle
room. And the liquid that is maybe been, you know, come off of the rice isn't all starchy and gluey.
Right.
So I completely agree with you. And I also think that your description of cooking the brown rice, draining it, putting it on a sheet tray, letting it cool all the way. I think that people don't think of brown rice when they think about grain salads.
Oh my gosh.
They're like, oh, I need the farro, the spelt, the rye berry, the, you know, the wheat berry, which is the same as a farro, just FYI,
right.
And get all stressed out or go searching for unhulled barley or whatever. Just in any grain bowl or grain salad recipe, brown rice. Just go to the brown rice.
Totally.
Love it.
If that's the thing that's always in your house, like, Don't freak out. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I love a farro.
Sure.
I love a barley.
Sure.
But, you know,
I'm not like I'm not like knocking rye berries right now.
Are you knocking rye berries right now, Carla? This is going to get heated.
Okay, so let's talk about
pressure
cooking, because I brought another book that I love this author so.
Nerd.
I know. Well, you know that people use my office as sort of like a casual research area.
I have. I've done that before.
And I really love to be surrounded by the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in this day and age where, like, you know, you Google it and it's like, oh, that must be true. The fact in the it's not. It's
fake
like
news.
Nice to go to a book. And especially older books. Like, I think Seductions of Rice is, it might be out of print. So for all the other nerds out there who are nerdy like me, the secondhand book market on Google, on Amazon, when there's out of print books and you go into like the secondhand booksellers, great finds.
A lot
I found
of stuff
some
there.
Really cool stuff. Anyway, so that's where I got my copy of Seductions of Rice. Anyway, so I brought a different book, Whole Grains Every Day, Every Way by Lorna Sass, who is...
Lorna Sass.
She is just one of the great people and is a grain expert and also a pressure cooker expert.
Wow.
I adore her. If you want to be entertained, Google Lorna Sass, Mark Bittman, pressure cooker. They did a series of videos, and Lorna Sass is wearing a chef's jacket that is just absolutely... covered in like every color bell pepper. It is just the most festive chef's jacket. And she's tiny, and Mark Bittman's very tall. So I think they had her standing on like a giant milk crate. Very entertaining.
Hilarious.
Learn a lot about pressure cooking too at the same time.
There you go.
Anyway, so I trust her a lot. And so her cooking whole grains in a pressure cooker, she has a bunch of timing here. So for brown basmati, she says 15 minutes under high pressure. So brown rice, ready to go.
That's fast.
It's really cool. But where's... Anyway, so that's a good... And I think in that scenario, it's still 2 to 4, like 2 cups of, say, 1 to 2. That makes more sense.
Right.
A cup of brown rice, 2 cups of liquid. But the great thing with the pressure cooker also is that if there's extra liquid left, which there probably will be because it's all hermetically sealed and steamy in there,
right.
You just drain it off.
Yeah.
And then you're
there
good
you
to go.
Bingo,
so this
bingo,
is your, like, I forgot to start my rice 20 minutes later, which is the same as the white rice. So
right.
Just Instant Pot people and my PCPs, just brown rice in 20 minutes.
I know. I mean, that's, honestly, I don't use my pressure cooker that often. I just have, like, a manual on the stove pressure cooker that my aunt gave me. Whenever I use it, it's almost always because I'm like, oh, I forgot the...
And it's not necessarily faster, right, in the rice cooker? It's
no,
just more...
No. The rice cooker, I mean, depending on what kind of rice cooker you have, I often think that the rice cooker, people misunderstand and think that the rice cooker is faster.
Right.
When in reality, it's just, it's optimized to make perfect rice. So it's like, might take a little bit more time, but the rice is going to be like more reliable and you don't have to think about it. I mean, it's like, my rice cooker for white rice, I think takes a solid like 10 minutes longer.
Right.
But then I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
And it's like just
no fear.
Done. You know, I like go to start like serving dinner. I'm like, oh, right. The rice is done. It has been done for 20 minutes. That's
so
great.
If you want to take the scaries out of rice.
Right.
Rice cooker.
And
if you want to rice fast, pressure cooker. If you want to taste as you rice.
Low.
Lots of water method. Low.
Yep.
Which we just coined the low.
On
and
the low.
If you really love... trusting the mystical powers of heat and time and want to throw yourself into...
What's this one going to be, Carla? What's it going to be? Because this is what I want to do.
Well, then you have to do the absorption method.
Oh,
if you
want
to just like trust physics and science and time and things that happen when you're not there and can't see it.
Right.
Absorption.
Absorption.
And you could feel probably like a magical wizard when you're done.
I feel like a magical wizard when I finish most things. And like, did laundry last night, and I was like, I am a magical wizard! Finished the brown rice. I am a magical wizard!
Okay, rice wizard.
Get a seat on the train. I am a magical wizard!
Oh my God, the greatest thing happened to me this morning.
What is it?
I was going to school with my younger son, and we kind of walk halfway, and then there's a bus that comes at that halfway point, and... all these people get off and then it's kind of empty and get back on. The bus came today, not a soul. And it was like rush hour. It was like 8:15 in the morning. And the door opened and I was like, is this bus empty? And like we said to the driver, like, this never happens. And he was like, oh, I actually got added into the route because I was behind. So they like put me in the middle of the route, and the whole ride to school had the whole place to ourselves.
That's cool. I thought the story was going to be like, you opened up and you were like, is this whole bus happening? He's like, yes, actually I'm dead. This is the ghost bus. We're going to Hades. Hop on. But you need an SBS coupon. Do you have one of those?
We do.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Anyway, it would have been even better if you went to the back of the bus and there was just like five pressure cookers, five rice cookers, every red rice, Bhutanese rice, black rice, whatever you want rice, all of the rices.
The rice bus.
Some with salt, some without, some with ghee, some with oil. Oh, that would have been really great.
Carla, let's quit our jobs. Let's buy a school bus. Let's just drive around in the rice bus. Just splashing ghee everywhere.
I think another great title for the podcast is Rice Wizard.
Rice Wizard.
Which is also a great name for like a packaged rice product.
Rice Wizard.
Yeah. Like Rice-A-Roni or
Uncle Ben's rebrand.
Because part of the whole Instant Pot thing is like total marketing genius, because actually it's not instant at all. The thing is like a slow cooker and like all of this other stuff, but they called it Instant Pot and everybody was like, that's it. That's the answer. I need
that's
that
great
thing that does everything instantly.
I don't want my stupid slow pot. I want my instant,
instant pot. I want it right now. So you could maybe think about having a rice cooker that does not really have any new technology, but is just rebranded Rice Wizard.
Rice Wizard.
They would fly off the shelves. The digital.
Can we edit this part out of the podcast? Because this is the last podcast before I become a millionaire.
Rice Wizard.
Rice Wizard.
And then they'll be like, who is he? And you'll get to wear that outfit from the pre-Ren, you know, the pre-Renaissance.
Oh, my Madrigals outfit?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you could be the mascot.
Oh,
like
my.
That could be.
It's not so wizardy. It's more like a squire, you know?
People think, someone said that we were under the influence. Some of the feedback we got was like they were high or drunk or like, no, we're not.
We're not high. We're not drunk. We're just PCP. Pressure cooker people.
We're high on rice.
We're high on rice.
And life.
And life.
Nah, the second one, not so much.
Yeah, not so much.
Okay. So one other thing I would say, and I'm surprised we didn't talk about kanji in the last episode.
Oh, my
gosh. Because kanji, okay, one time, I think it was the early, I was experimenting with pressure cooker. It was like one of those weekends where the kids were little and I was just like, oh my God, what even is going on? I totally mismeasured the water and the rice ratio and like cooked it for twice as long and like opened it up and it was gruel. It was just like, oh, well, great job. Like way too much. And then I realized like, oh, actually I just made brown rice congee. Mm. And so I just kept cooking it and cooked off some of that liquid and seasoned it. And it was great. So even when you mess rice up, like that's the thing. If you burn it, you could just add some oil to it and pretend that like that was intentional.
Oh, yeah.
And if you overcook it or have way too much liquid, it turns into congee. Throw some scallions and soy sauce and drop an egg in there and you're good to go.
Totally. Call it porridge.
Yeah,
that's
call
cool,
it.
Cool, right?
Call it porridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you could serve it at like a Nordic restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With like
some like just ashes on top. No, not specific about where the ashes came from. It's just
the leek, of course. This from the leek ash.
Which cold cinders. Soot.
Okay. I burned rice last night.
You burned rice last night.
I burned the rice. We ate it anyway. It was fine. It was my first.
The rice was nice enough.
It was nice enough and the people were very nice. So we all ate the rice. But I made Persian rice last night.
Cool.
For the first time.
Amazing.
Had never done it before. Andy Baragani has like made it many times in the kitchen. He is a rice wizard.
I mean,
really though.
He's in on this because he's going to be the mascot.
I know. We should invite him on, actually, to talk to us about making Persian rice.
Well, the thing is, if Andy was on this podcast with us, we would talk about rice for, it would be like a marathon.
It would be like
four hours long.
It would be ridiculous.
That's
So while I was doing it, I was thinking about Andy and I was cooking out of salt, fat, acid, heat, which is Samin Nosrat's book.
Oh, amazing.
And I just felt like she, in her book, it's like, this is a shortcutty method, but it gives really good results. And it's like, I was like, that's what I'm in the mood for right now. Because I had not decided what my side dish was going to be. My friends were already over. We were maybe one bottle deep already. And I was like, I'm just going to do this. I'm going for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very satisfying experience. So you parboil the rice, long grain white rice. Parboil it in very salted water. She wants you to put like half a cup for 4 quarts of water, half
she
a cup
would.
Of salt. I know. She loves salt, that
I
one.
I love that about Samin.
And then you drain it. First you rinse it, wash it till it's clear. Then you cook it in the lots of water method, but with a lot of salt too. Drain it, cold water, stop the cooking. And then you take 1 cup of that out and mix it with some plain yogurt.
Hello.
Which when I got to that part of recounting it to Andy, he started making like clucking noises and shaking, you know, very like, it was all physical. There was no words. He was like, oh, I don't do that. Oh, she's, and they know each other and love each other. But he's like, oh, and what else is in there? And I was like, well, then you take butter and oil, 3 tablespoons of each, into a cast iron pan. And he was like, huh, you know, and I was like, but that's what it said. And it was like, it was great. So you have 1 cup of the rice mixed with yogurt and you do the butter and the oil and it's all foaming, gets really hot. You put that yogurty parboiled rice on the bottom, and then you pile the rest of the rice over.
Oh.
And then you take a spoon and you make some steam holes. Mm. And this is where it gets really different. So her method, then you kind of turn the heat down a bit, and you want to create this like really dark crust on the bottom. And the rice that's mounded on top, because it's parboiled and the steam is coming up through those air holes. Like,
is it covered, this thing?
So Samin's recipe is not.
Okay.
I think there are some versions definitely that are. And to be fair, hers, it was titled like Persian-ish rice. So this is like her, I think, like fast and easy and not such a fussy way, which I really appreciated. But then Andy was like, no cover, no towel wrapped around to become a lifting off thing. Absorb. So then he was talking about his mom's method and the thing. I'm like, I have to make this again. Like it was 100% just my first time doing it, not really knowing, intuitively like trying to get there, and we still ate it. It was very crunchy. It was a little too dry and it got too dark. But I think some people have that experience of trying to make rice, and like this, you're supposed to have a crust, but they're like, I burned it. I'm never making rice again.
Right.
Whereas like, I was like, I burned it. I can't wait to do it again and make it better in a smaller pan with a lid. And now I'm going to do Andy's method and like, look it up. Have you ever made that?
I have not. Lauren, my fiance, who I think she styled that shoot.
Really?
And she came back from that day. This is like the
Persian New Year story?
It was not the Persian New Year story. It was the kind of Andy's modern Middle Eastern cooking.
The saffron rice cake.
Which the saffron rice cake. And she came home from that shoot and she was like, I had the most amazing thing. It was so good. I have to make it. And like made it, I think, that night actually. But it's so good, and it's such an incredible dish to serve.
Yeah.
At a dinner party, because
there's so much drama, because you invert it, then you have to like invert it. And actually no one was in the kitchen with me when I did that last night, and I did it. It was great.
So when you say invert it, you mean you put your platter over top of your pan that has the rice in it.
Yes.
You flip it over in one deft motion and then
swiftly and confidently,
and then
lift it off so that the part that was under, the crusty part, is the top.
Right.
And it, except for the parts that were too dark, it was really, it looks awesome. And then you kind of crack into it and
it was good. It's so delicious.
So Lauren made it for you.
She has. I have not made, I mean, I've made different versions of like a crispy rice situation. You
Andy,
had a good recipe.
Well, I had a good recipe, but that was like a total made up thing with a nonstick pan and chicken fat. And that was great. It was just like getting a ratio down. Other favorite rice dishes.
Oh. Favorite rice dishes. Well, now I'm rice. My favorite rice dishes. Oh gosh. You know, one of the best rice. This is also a crispy rice situation. But back when Lee DeRossier was cooking at Achilles Heel in Greenpoint, and he would do his Hell's Chicken, which was these incredible chickens that had been, they had been smoked over the open fire, and then they had been steamed, and then they were grilled, and they were just like, it was this crazy method, but they were so delicious. He would always have all of this chicken fat, smoky chicken fat, that he would just spread out on a plancha, like with just like a big metal, like cast iron cooking surface over the fire, and then he would just slap down like big chunks of cooked rice and just kind of like
It was like short grain white rice,
short
right?
grain white rice, yeah.
That was cooked completely,
still sticking a little bit, and just kind of, and the surface was so hot and so well slicked with schmaltz that you would just get these sheets of crispy rice where you would have like just golden brown on one side, even a little bit singed.
Yeah.
The other side's chewy and soft.
Yes.
And the whole process would take like, you know, maybe 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Something like that. You're just like, maybe
less. And
then
it's picking up more smoke from the because everything he did was over live fire and it's coming around. Ugh, yeah.
It was so good.
Talk about a rice wizard. That guy.
I like to think that I am the reason that Lee learned how to cook rice.
Oh.
Because, so Lauren's favorite, the meal that she would ask for on her birthday every year when she was a kid was sticky white rice, salt and pepper ribs, grilled ribs, and artichokes and mayonnaise.
Love it.
That was like the weird, like three foods together. And so one year I threw her a surprise birthday party where I enlisted Lee to host at Achilles Heel. And I was like, is there any chance that you can make this very specific weird meal? And we like kind of like, we had it all set. It was going to happen. We were actually like we were out of town and we were coming back and all the friends were going to be there and the food was going to be there. It was a thing. And I'm like in Massachusetts. It's the morning of, and Lee calls me and he's like, I can't do it. I'm like, what do you mean you can't do it? And he's like, I can't make rice. I always mess it up.
Oh
every
my God,
time.
That's
always
amazing.
And then I walked him through the perfect pot of rice technique.
Wow.
But like whispering, like walking off into a field, being like, okay, here's what you got to do, bud. All right.
Go to bonappetit.com.
Rinse it off real good. And then
that's
sure
incredible.
Enough, it worked.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And then he became a rice wizard.
And then he became a rice wizard.
You just got to get over that hump, you know?
Once you make it once and it works.
Right. So I had a similar cooked kind of grilled rice like that at the restaurant that's at 10,000 Waves, which is an amazing Japanese spa that has a restaurant in Santa Fe.
10,000 Villages.
No, 10,000 Waves in Santa Fe, which I'm going back in June. Ooh. Because we went 2 years ago and like can't wait to go. Anyway, it has like Japanese soaking tubs and all the things, and then it's just a really great, cool place. But they have a delicious Japanese restaurant like on the grounds. And that was the first time I ever had grilled rice cakes. So same as what you're describing, short grain white rice that I think was seasoned with rice vinegar. It was like sushi rice that was seasoned and then formed into the little patties. Mm. And then they grilled them and brushed it with like a soy mirin.
Oh, my God.
And so it was crispy, but also a little bit salty and sweet on the outside and hot in the middle, but steamy and like a little bit of crunch. It's like one of those things that we ordered it for the table and then everybody took a bite and like immediately ordered a second round.
Right.
Those are harder. I've been kind of like messing around trying to recreate those at home. It's hard to get the texture of the rice just right. But
yeah.
Again, like grilled rice.
Totally.
What?
Why not?
Branch out.
Branch out. Live a little.
Make risotto. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Make your rice and beans.
Mm.
But grill some rice. I don't know.
Grill some rice. Why not? What do you got to lose? Just rice. That's also the thing that's nice about experimenting and like really messing around with rice. It's like there's so many possibilities. And it's cheap.
Right.
You know, it's not like, oh, go mess around with some, you know,
prime
Andy's
rib.
Saffron and prime rib. Andy's
but also
house
when
of
you
saffron
mess
and prime
it,
rib.
When you mess it up, it still can be something.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. Like, you made it mushy,
go
make
it
into congee. It's too dry, add more. I don't know. Yeah.
Throw yogurt sauce all over it.
Yeah.
Call it a day.
Yeah.
Drown it in kimchi juice.
Mm.
So next time, I don't know.
Let us know. Send one of these emails that I keep hearing about. And maybe we'll talk about, maybe there will be a rice part three.
I think now we've done white rice and brown rice, but we haven't gotten into any of the other.
Oh, yeah.
The red rice, the black rice.
There's certain things we're not going to
talk about. Forbidden
rice. We're never going to talk about forbidden rice.
I forbade you.
Not allowed. That's the only rice that is on that bus to hell that I was talking about
That's
earlier.
Right.
That's the only rice they have.
So hashtag rice wizard if you want to like get that trending.
Hashtag rice wizard at us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go make that Instagram account right now.
Rice wizard?
Rice wizard.
I think you should.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks, Carla. Bye.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah. Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Early in a relationship, a weekend away can be fatal. So it seems like lunacy that a month after I met David, we planned a trip together to Argentina. From there, travel became a big part of our romance. There's no better way to get to know someone than to see them far from the comforts of home. I got to know that David was curious as he pored over guidebooks to find some alluring oddity to visit. He dragged us to an out-of-the-way village in India, known for its exuberantly frescoed homes, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. I got to know that he was tireless, eager to walk all over Prague, rain be damned. I got to know that he was outgoing, interested in talking to anyone, and also that he speaks French better than he lets on. A cliché, but it just sounds romantic. And I got to know that he is always, always prepared. For an overnight flight, David had sleeping pills. To counteract prolonged exposure to unfamiliar cuisine, he had peanut butter. For destinations where the only coffee available was instant, he had a plastic French press and a pound of the good stuff. Who wouldn't fall in love? Some years after that first vacation in Argentina, we planned a trip to Bangladesh, the country of my parents' birth, but a place about which I, assimilated American kid that I was, knew almost nothing. David, ever prepared, stopped at the duty-free during our layover for a bottle of whiskey. The stuff is hard to come by in that devoutly Muslim country, and there's something so right about a drink after a long day in a new place. Upon arriving, David decanted the booze into an empty plastic water bottle, and that vessel accompanied us everywhere we went. Outside Dhaka, we visited a tea plantation, an astonishingly quiet place, verdant even in the dry winter season. We walked through the fields and the adjacent village where the agricultural laborers lived, then retreated to the main house for a secret nip from the plastic bottle and a very late dinner. David's a photographer. I'm a writer. Thus, everywhere we went, he took pictures and I took notes. So it was a pleasure trip that also involved some work. We spent some time in the city of Chittagong on the Bay of Bengal, where the local trade is ship breaking instead of sunbathing. We called in favors to be shown the corpses of decommissioned ocean vessels, a surreal blight on the environment usually kept hidden from tourists like us, but a remarkable thing we were very eager to see. That night we went back to our grim business hotel, quite in need of a drink. We spent 3 nights on a little boat, puttering through the Bay of Bengal's mangrove forest, a habitat for the planet's few remaining wild tigers. It was there that we rang in the new year, standing in our little cabin that was so tiny there was nowhere to sit beside the two narrow bunks. We drained the bottle that night. Thereafter, our itinerary carried us back to the capital city of Dhaka, where we would see my favorite relatives, my aunt and uncle. They were a hilarious and cosmopolitan couple, easygoing people who were also superb hosts. When they understood that David and I were hoping to have a drink, they decided to take us to their club. That club is a colonial-era workaround to circumvent the society's conservatism and is even now one of a handful of places in that huge city where one can order alcohol. It looked a bit like an unremarkable hotel or a building at a small, out-of-the-way college, but it had an air of British-inflected pomp to it. My uncle told me I had to tuck in my shirt before going in, and the waitstaff spoke that hand-me-down formal English you hear in the former colonies. Our drinks were served with a little silver bowl containing a mound of peanuts tossed with minced onion, lime juice, and cilantro. Like every great bar snack, it made us want to snack more, drink more, talk more, laugh more, all of which we did. David and I have been married for almost a decade now, and the way we travel these days is quite different. I've not left the country in 8 years, which is not coincidentally precisely how old our first son is. These days, when I get on a plane, I rely on David, ever prepared, to remember to pick up a rodent track to occupy the big kid and some bubble gum so the little one can pop his ears. Our family trips are wonderful, but I don't mind remembering when we traveled a bit lighter. Though I'm not nearly skilled enough a cook to recreate the delicious complex food we ate on our trip to Bangladesh, I can manage that simple bar snack and find myself transported both across the world and back in time.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che, and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.